I'll go ahead and get started. Do we need anyone official from Ohio Linux Fest, or he said they were going to record or something? I don't know. Okay. Well, it's possible this first part will just be for you guys that are here in person, and the rest will be preserved for posterity later on. Let's see. So how many folks in the room are already a boss? Okay. Are the remaining folks, do you want to be a boss? How about if you have one of those jobs where, like, they could use three of you? Oh, yep, okay, cool. So for all of you, this is how to get more done. I'm going to talk a lot about how to do that within a code project or a user group kind of setting, but a lot of it sort of applies across the board. My background is all in political and community organizing, and then I got the free software bug around 8 years ago, and so now I have come and brought that, all of that kind of knowledge of how you do organizing and get people to do stuff for free in an efficient manner to the task of free software. So when I first got here, I would talk to folks about their software projects, and they'd say, like, well, you know, we would love to have more contributors, but we have yet to find anyone who's worthy. And I was like, worthy? Huh. Like, I mean, what do you guys mean by worthy? And so, you know, there would be some back and forth and some hemming and hawing, and they kind of meant someone who's just like them but wants to take orders from themselves, which doesn't really work in the real world. I don't know if any of you have an evil twin, but if you have an evil twin, or maybe you are the evil twin, I don't know, maybe you don't need this talk at all because you already cloned yourself and then figured out how to be the one who tells the other one what to do. If that's the case, then you're set. You don't need this. For everyone else, I'm going to tell you why you are not going to find someone exactly like you except wants to take orders. This is not going to happen. So people gradually become involved in projects. They gradually gain the skills and expertise, and they do it for their own reasons. They're not robots. So we're going to talk about how to get the most out of those folks. I think it's helpful when you are the boss to think about what kind of a boss you want to be. It sort of helps you to visualize how you do it. Do you guys remember this boss from the X-Files? He's a bad boss, right? This is a terrible boss. Like, not only is he secretive and you never know what's really going on, he gives you these orders, like, the orders change every week, plus he's putting people in danger. So this is, like, the anti-boss. I don't know how many of you have seen Liz Lemon on 30 Rock. She's certainly a friendlier boss, and I think nobody dies under her in her employee pool. But she's like a panicker. She waits till the last minute. She asks somebody to do something and doesn't really give them a good sense of how important it is. And then she wants to know the day it was due. Like, oh my gosh, I forgot to tell you that this is actually really important. We're all going to get fired if you don't do it immediately. That's terrible. Nobody wants that boss. It's as entertaining as it is to watch on television. And then Fringe, I don't know if people watched Fringe, but Broyles is a good boss. You can fill in the blank your own boss. He lets people, like, he gives them a little bit of leeway to do their own things. He backs them up against, like, the boss above him. He tries to give them more information when they need it to do their jobs. He gives them enough leeway to mess up occasionally and then tries to help them, like, all right, well, what are we going to do going forward, even if that was technically kind of a fail. So maybe you got Yoda, you got Obi-Wan Kenobi, or maybe you have a real-life person that you admire in the way that they are the boss, or the way that they're the team lead, or the way that they bring your user group together, and you can picture that person. But whoever it is, figure out who it is, and then picture them, so that then when you get, like, a weird edge case, like, because I'm going to talk in all this abstract stuff that you're going to then apply later to real cases, so then you can kind of think, like, what would Yoda do if, you know, his underlings came in late every day for a week? And I know they're hungover, but they won't admit it. I don't know what Yoda would do in that situation, but, you know, if you got the Yoda mindset, then maybe you would find your way to that answer. And then one caveat, delegation, while great and is going to help you be more efficient, get more done, build more code, bring in more users, all of those things. It's not magic. It doesn't happen without work. You actually do need to do some work. So you put in, and then you get back. Sometimes you put in, and then people disappear. Sorry, it just happens. Sometimes you put in, and you get back amazing results. You get someone who ends up like running the show later on. It's awesome. But it still is going to take some work and some investment. So one way to make sure that the amount of work that you're putting into your delegation is as efficient as possible is to reuse your system. So maybe you found something that's a really good bite-sized bug for bringing in beginners, and then you have a good secondary task to put them on. So you have this like kind of pipeline that you bring people along. If it worked once, like see if you can reuse it so that you're not always like, oh gosh, now what do I do with this second person that wants to be delegated to? So if you have on-ramps that work, then you know, document them and reuse them. Don't reinvent the wheel every single time. And then the other thing about delegating is once you've done it, you can pass it on and someone else can delegate that task. So it becomes this like recursive delegation party where like eventually you're at the top of a pyramid with many minions. It's going to take a little while, but that's if you're always passing on the power to delegate and do all that stuff, then you will eventually have delegees delegating to more delegees. And then lastly, you want to delegate early and often. So the folks that I talk to who are saying, oh, I haven't found anyone worthy, it's because they were doing like four people's jobs at once, doing like 60 hours a week, and like all of those tasks were like not related in a way that they were ever going to find someone who did all that stuff. So then they were like, I don't have time to delegate. And I was like, right, because you waited too long. You should have delegated when you like hit the 20-hour a week mark or the 10-hour a week mark, not the 60-hour a week mark. And we'll go on. I'll go into some more detail on the early and often. But the more you make a habit of it, the easier it is for you to let go. If you get 7 years into a project and you've never asked anyone to help you out on anything besides like, oh, could you answer the info queue? And then I'm going to do everything else. 7 years, you've got some really bad habits already kind of formed about delegating. It's going to feel really bad. The first thing you give away, they're not going to do it right. And you're gonna be like a rusty, not perfect delegator. And they're going to be like, ah, I knew it. It's terrible. You let the people mess it up, and then it's awful. So early and often. So as soon as you start getting something and you have an inkling that, you know, it's not going to be like your personal bonsai pursuit, you know, start delegating it out. So that's all about you as the delegator. But the delegee, as I said, is their own person with their own thoughts and ideas and needs. This is Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And this is a, you know, the general human condition. This is just people, human beings, want all of these things. And the great thing is that for software projects, we are really awesome at providing that first one. There's plenty of stuff to learn. There's stuff to learn. Sometimes there's stuff to relearn. Sometimes there's stuff you learn that you didn't need to learn. There's all kinds of learning. You can learn to code. You can learn to fork a project, all kinds of stuff. So as far as providing people with the self-actualization of like, hey, I learned something today, that is a thing that is really great for us to do when we bring people into coding projects. And that's probably the easiest one for us to achieve. But we can't forget about the other ones. So people we're social. We, you know, not that far from the monkeys that like to groom each other and all that stuff. I'm not saying groom your contributors, literal, but you do want to make them feel nice and part of the group. And you thank them. Do you know how much it costs to thank people? Nothing. It costs nothing. And then I think beyond thanking people, you want to thank them thoroughly. So think about the difference between like, you know, someone does like 6 hours worth of work, fixes a bug, sends in the patch, and then you're like, thanks, Sarah. Versus like, wow, I'm so glad you took that on because nobody wanted it. It kind of looked like a pain in the butt, and I know you must have spent a really long time on it. Thank you so much for doing it. takes you another 20 seconds to type that email, but the impact is huge, like compared to thanks. I don't know if anyone here is in a band. Okay. This will be a little excursion to land you're unfamiliar with. But if you play in a band, what happens is you go see your friends' bands, and then they come see your band. And it's like this quid pro quo thing, like where they, you know, everyone does it. And if they didn't like your band, but they still like you, what they say after you get off the stage is, great set. And you're like, yeah, cool. Which is what I said when I went to see your band that I didn't like, but I still like you. And, you know, it's this whole thing where we pass along this empty, like, yeah, great set. So when you just say, like, thanks, Sarah, it sounds like great set, you know, like, So thank people thoroughly. While we're on the topic of the social animal, if you can find opportunities to help people grow their network and be, you know, feeling more part of the group. So say you're here somewhere like Ohio Linux Fest and you know that more than one of your contributors is here. Like set up lunch and have them all meet each other and introduce them to each other. Introduce them to other folks. And again, don't just introduce them thoroughly. Like, you know, this is Bob, he's a contributor. Yeah, sure. Has anyone ever had like associate or intern on their resume? So, okay, you don't have to admit it, it's fine. But like when you see that, you're like, huh, I have no idea. Like it could have been anything. So if you can introduce people thoroughly and say like, Bob took on triaging the bug queue, it was a mess. And he made it all awesome again, and we are so thankful. This is Bob, he's great. So Bob is like, maybe a little like, you guys, like I'm blushing, you know? And that's great. He's so into your project right now. Like you just told him, you just told another person how awesome he is for your project. So this is like part of the human skill and needs. I'm not saying lie. I mean, you know, if Bob actually like erased the whole database and then, you know, stole your girlfriend, like don't lie. But, you know, thoroughly and honestly. Titles, also fun. Like I said, associate, intern, is not very specific. So, you know, give people like, oh, you know, library manager or like whatever, patch triage or something, outreach coordinator. Something, maybe they'll pick it, maybe you pick it, but it's again, this is one of those things that is free. So it's like something you can provide for someone, especially if they're doing unpaid work. More likely than not, if they're doing a lot of unpaid work for you, they would like to put it on their resume. Don't make them put contributor or associate. Let them put something that kind of spells out what they did and sounds like a real thing. It costs you nothing to let them have like a nice title for their unpaid volumes of work they're doing on your project. So, free, as I said. I'm a fan of free. So for security purposes, back when we get down further down that pyramid, we get into, you know, so there's like self-actualization and feeling good about yourself. And then there's like feeling social and part of the group. And then there's like when you get to like feeling safe, you know, so we're getting into that kind of stuff. And of course, like, you know, if you have someone who thinks it's like funny to make death threats on your IRC channel, like that person's got to go. Everyone else needs to feel safe. But you also don't want to be the kind of boss that's like types like, we need to talk, dot, 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 and then like walk away from IRC for like a couple hours. Like if this is a paid boss, if you're like the paid boss and you send that we need to talk, people are like, oh, I'm going to have to look for a new job. Like, what is it? And then they're like, I just thought we could all go out to lunch on Friday because it's Jenny's birthday. And it's like, what the hell? I like coronary because I thought I was getting canned. So try not to keep people jumpy and feeling uncertain about their position. Like, you know, so that's for security purposes. If you're doing a user group and you have the option of like, oh, the public library, it means we have to finish at 9, but it's well lit and it's a public place versus like, oh, just go down this alley. You know, we're going to meet in Al's basement. There's like a creaky, like kind of horror movie intro, fluorescent light dangling and flickering. Like, I'm not going to that meeting. I don't even care if you tell me, like, there's money at that meeting. Like, I'm not going to that meeting. So kind of keep people's minds, like, your safety thing and how it looks. Like, if you can sort of step outside of how it looks to yourself, like maybe you know Al and you ceased noticing that creaky, weird light like long, long, long ago. Try and step outside and think, how would that look to a new person? Maybe not so awesome. So you know, if you're not having events, you probably don't have to worry about this too much. But when it comes up, make sure you're, you know, making people feel like it's safe to contribute. And then lastly, the mortal coil, while we're on like the, you know, this is down at the bottom. People need food, they need places to use the toilet, they need, if they are on wheels, they need ramps, like all those kinds of things. I think, you know, I'm not going to dwell on that for very long. You know that if half your contributors are vegan, you can't have your contributor lunch at a steakhouse, right? So, you know, just kind of think about like, the mortal coil. Like, and if you don't know, just ask, like, where do you guys think we should have lunch? Like, and they'll tell you. It's fine. Okay. So, I'm assuming we have a lot of like the kind of folks who as kids were like, ooh, I know the answer. Were you that kid? Anyone? Maybe? You don't have to admit it. It's okay. I was that kid. I was like, I know the answer. Or I got something to say. And so, this is about like preparing your project for delegation. You want to start to cultivate a questions welcome. Yeah. You have three kids like that? Amazing. Now you just had to teach them to code. So this questions welcome. This is unbridled enthusiasm. This is one of the scarcest resources that you will come across. So if someone comes to you and brings their unbridled enthusiasm, you have to be ready. And you have to be like, awesome, we love that. At Media Gotham, we're like, yes, we love that. Come in, like, ask questions. Does it work with this? Like, not yet, but you could code that up. Like, you know, so questions, welcome. And even, you know, sometimes they're complaints, sometimes they're comments, whatever it is. But more questions means less frustration. So when you have new people getting involved with your stuff, I think about the difference between, oh, hey, so I spent 10 hours on this, and then I realized I had checked out the old repo instead of the new repo, but because everyone's so grumpy in IRC, I didn't want to check in and stuff. And you know. And then you're like, oh, sorry, yeah, that was the wrong repo. And then they're like, they kind of hate you after that, right? Like, they just spent 10 hours in the wrong place. So, like, you don't want to do that. You know what happens to that unbridled enthusiasm? Like, woo, like, gone. So the more people ask questions, the better off it's going to be for them, but also for you. Like, if someone goes and plows into a task for, like, 10 hours, they can mess it up really bad and then bring back this thing where you're like, I have no idea how you got there or what you did or even how to begin to help you fix that. Like, so it's going to be easier for you to answer, like, periodic, like, short-term, like, I did another hour of work. Like, how's this going? Like, at the beginning. I mean, obviously, like, as people get on and you give them bigger tasks, you hope that they can kind of answer their own questions a little bit more. But at the beginning, more questions is going to be less frustration for everyone. 101 questions. If you love answering 101 questions, that's fantastic. I suspect most people don't love answering 101 questions over and over and over again. If you can figure out what the FAQ is for your site, for your project, for contributing, and answer them once, and then be like, hey, I'm so glad you asked. Actually, there's a whole bunch of those questions that are going to be answered right here, along with some other ones that you might have next. So 101 question, if you can create something that answers them all at once, sometimes it's inside your project, specific to your project, sometimes it's outside. I'm on the board at OpenHatch, and we have a bunch of different tutorials. So like when college students come to projects and they're like, hey, so I know how to code in Python and I'm really jazzed to contribute, but I don't know about any of these collaborative tools that you guys use in the free and open source software world. And so instead of being like, oh, sweet, well, our lead contributor is like hanging around in IRC, like I'm sure he would love to do a whole nother training on Git again. Like, probably not. But we have a tutorial on the Open Hatch site where you can say, like, hey, go over here. And it's this interactive thing on the web where you can teach yourself to learn how to use Git and diff and patch and IRC and all the collaborative tools that you need. So there, and there are other resources like that. Stack Overflow, if you're sending adults and not minors. So there are lots of places where people can find the answer to their questions. So as much as you can, like, have like kind of an idea of where some of the 101 questions are going to be answered, and then you don't have to spend your own time answering them over and over again. So this is the reuse thing. And then lastly on the, you know, where people like plowing forward, like, awesome, I'm going to work on this thing, and then they kind of hit a roadblock. Do you guys know what a licked cookie is? Yeah. Okay. So this is when someone's like, I'm totally doing that task. Like, they've licked the cookie, and then they put it back on the plate. So then someone else gets in there, and they're like, oh, I kind of hit the part where I need to, like, I would like that ticket. Oh, but I don't know who that guy is, and he's been contributing for, like, 5 years. I'll just wait around and stop working. I'll take my enthusiasm down a notch and wait for someone to do something about that licked cookie. So there's a couple different ways you can do that. You can either go through all of the tickets that people have taken and have not touched in 30 days or 60 days or whatever makes sense for the pace of your project and, you know, ping people, like, are you still working on that? Because if you're not and you don't respond positively, we're going to take it away. Or you can do what the OpenVox project does, which is if you don't touch it in 60 days, then it automatically goes back in the pool. So the thing that happens when people have taken on a task and then they're not doing it is, like, they're kind of a little ashamed sometimes. They're like, yeah, and they don't want to talk about it, you know. So if it just kind of quietly goes back into the pool automatically, like, that's the easiest. And then it's, and everyone knows that that's the case. And so having a system in place for licked cookies is going to help your new contributors, you know, navigate around and get done what they want to get done. It got really quiet. Now let me know if I'm too loud. And then documentation. This is so critical for getting your project ready for delegees. I have questions for you guys. When do you think is the best time to document? Just to say stop whenever. Whoa. You guys are like opposed to documentation? All right, let's try this one more time. There's going to be more audience participation, just so you know. All right, when do we document? Okay. Because you know what happens is your level of interest in the task does. So then what happens is like, yeah, so like, I mean, when you're here, like the documentation is like, this task sucks, I'm sorry, the end. You know, so like, don't leave docs like that for like a new person who's like, ooh, can I take on bug triage? Can I? And you're like, yeah, awesome. Be sure they're getting this kind of vibe at the top. And then also you don't leave things out where it's like, you know, oh, I forgot to say, and then this, all this, that, and the other thing. Like, when I first started looking at free software textbooks, I was like, is this volume 2? And they're like, no, it's an intro, but it assumes you know like 18 other things. And that's not really written down anywhere. And I'm like, sure, chapter 1's not missing. And I'm like, no. So don't write docs where chapter 1 is missing. And the best way to do it is to start when you are still discovering chapter 1 for yourself. Now we're going to talk about expectations. If you guys saw a hotel like this, you would expect there was no roof, right? But if you didn't, and then you checked into the hotel, and you got in your room, and there was, like, no roof, you would be really pissed. Like, what do you mean there's no roof? Anyway, I just thought that was funny. Maybe my sense of humor is weird. But for contributors, what you want to do is your best to communicate the time and complexity it is going to take to complete a certain task. I have a friend, she's a liberal arts major, but she thought, you know, she kind of got the free software bug, so she took a programming class, and she got one of those homework assignments where it's like, you know, a whole bunch of different pieces and then like two stubs or so that she had to fill in. But it was like, you know, basically the assignment was like, write 4 or 5 lines of code that works within this whole other program. So, like, you can't just write, like, well, I decided to write print Hello World, and I'm done. And it's like, no, 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 it has to do specific stuff, and it has to work with the rest of the code base, such as it is. And so she, you know, she had, like, little imposter syndrome, and she's like, yeah, so basically I suck at programming because it took me, like, 4 hours. And I was like, wait a second. So this is your first ever Python code? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, 4 hours for four lines as part of like a, like, you know, a couple different pieces and like a 200 line program that you didn't know anything about before you start. That's not bad. 4 hours is pretty good. Did it work at the end of 4 hours? She's like, yeah, it did. And I'm like, no, you're doing good. You're doing like, that's, you're like an absolute beginner. 4 lines and 4 hours, you know, cool. So if you can, and you know your code base and you know like how long it takes to do things, maybe it's an event thing and you're like, huh, so just call all the vendors and see if they want tables again. Like, if you did it last year, you know, like, it's not just like, oh, hey, just call me back, let me know about your table. It's like, no, it's gonna, there's gonna be some back and forth. So let people know how long it's gonna take, how complicated it's gonna be. And then they won't get into like halfway through and be like, I must be the stupidest person in the world. This is taking me forever. So if you can save people from feeling stupid, people don't like to go and do something where they feel stupid. So don't have them do that at your project. Also let them know who's who. So like if someone does patch review or like somebody else is gonna be involved in like a process that you've delegated off to somebody else, make sure they know so they don't get like a, uh-oh, I must have screwed up because Chad wrote me an email about my work. And it's like, oh, no, no, no. If they know in advance, like, oh, Chad writes everybody about the bugs. It's cool. It's like a thing he does. Or, you know, he's on that committee. Like, you've joined the team that he's part of. So let them know who is who. This is also, you know, the fewer surprises, the less the opportunity for misinterpretation and thinking about it in the wrong way is. And then lastly, life happens. So sometimes someone's contributing and, you know, and then they decide like they're going to go to grad school or they have a baby or they have to go home and take care of a sick parent. You want to let people know like that's okay. Like, you know, like, yes, your project is important, but it is not more important than taking care of a sick parent. So that they can leave gracefully and it won't be like, huh. You know, well, Julie was awesome until, like, that thing with her mom. And it was like, no, 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 no. No, we want Julie, like, once, like, we hope her mom gets better, she comes back and she's like, hey, thanks for letting me gracefully step down, hand off all my stuff. I'm ready to come back. Or maybe she doesn't. Maybe she does something else, but she talks you guys up all the time. And she's like, yeah, oh, I used to contribute on this awesome project. If you're looking for software that does this, like, they're a great group of people, super nice. Like, so, you know, whatever, like, no reason to send, like, a grumpy little storm cloud over, like, an ex-contributor's head off into the world or a slight feeling of shamefulness that, like, they didn't finish, like, something for you. So let people go when it's time to go. And so this is, I just think this guy is really cute. It's a little kind of a hamster guy, and he's eating the grass. Anyway, he's toiling away down at the bottom working on tiny tasks, right? Much like your new contributors will be at first. And they will be like way down here, and they'll be like looking way up here, and they'll be like, wow, look at that, the top of that mountain, John O'Bacon, Linus Torvalds, RMS, and then I'm all the way like 10,000 feet down here. And that can feel a little like, grueling. Like, maybe your stuff doesn't feel so important down here. But it is up to you to sort of tie the macro to the micro and let people know as much as they can, like, well, you know, the bug triage happens so that then we can get, like, new plugins set and ready to ship. Then that gives us the option to include them in the next release, and then that makes the project go forward so that we can reach out to people that need it with that specific plugin, whatever. It's like, however you gotta tie the threads so that they understand, like, this ENC task that you're working on is valuable and important to the overall. So it is your job as the delegee to make that connection for folks. You also want to make sure that people are starting on bite-sized bugs. So you may be very familiar with your code base or very familiar with how things happen in your user group, but when someone comes in new, they're not going to know. So like, don't give them like something that you've been doing for 5 years and takes you 10 minutes and expect them to do it in 10 minutes. It's going to take them a little longer. Sometimes you end up having to delegate something that feels too small to delegate. And that is actually totally okay. We maintain a database at OpenHatch where folks can give us their bite-sized bugs so that potential new contributors can come in and sort of check out that project and see what they're up to. Think of the tiny bug that is almost or sometimes actually too small to delegate as like an interview for your new contributors. Like, so you came in, you were excited, did you go and get the repository, and then did you follow our steps? Like, did you file a bug report, or did you, you know, submit a patch, or whatever the steps are that we have set up for folks when they are newly coming to us? Did you do all of those things? Even if it was just fixing, like, a stupid typo somewhere. And, you know, like, of course you can fix your own typos, but if it's like takes a little bit of doing, you can file it as a bite-sized bug and it's not critical, leave it around. And that is what is gonna let folks know like, oh, I think I could do this. So you just kind of get them like incrementally up to like bigger stuff. So this is for folks that are gonna end up being great contributors, the initial outlay is gonna be the biggest. And then lastly, like, this is, you know, have you guys ever been where it says, like, somebody, so-and-so, like, famous left here, right? Like, on a hotel or whatever. And so sometimes when folks come in, they're like, oh, wow, I'll never be as cool as Guido Van Rossum. They're like, okay, well, maybe not, but, like, you know, he files bugs and fixes typos and started, you know, he didn't burst out of the womb with a programming language in his hand. So like kind of letting people know like this is where everybody starts, and like so-and-so who runs our meetings or like gave the keynote at our, you know, programming languages conference last year, like started out here just like 3-4 years ago or something, you know, just so they know like this is the way in. Like you, it's not like there's a door over here for perpetual boring minion work and then a super secret rock star door over here that we're not telling you about. Like, they're the same door. So if you can communicate that to folks, I think it's important. And it keeps them motivated. And it's true, because it's true. Like, you know, nobody comes out like, oh, I'm gonna write a programming language as soon as I get out of this womb. Like, no. So, all right, so, birds. You guys see how birds, like, they gather in groups, and then they all, like, at once fly from somewhere cold to somewhere warm. But they don't talk, right? They just do it. Like, maybe it's telepathy. Maybe it's, like, a look with their little beady eyes. I don't know. But they get up, and then they do it in this sort of mathematically symmetrical, nice little V shape. I don't know. Maybe your project is working on telepathy, which would be fantastic. I think telepathy would be great. In the interim, though, I think we're going to have to continue to talk to each other. And for the delegee-delegator relationship, the talking is critical. Telepathists, you know, again, you can skip this part. Evil twins, telepathists, all fine. But we have a thing we call in community organizing the one-on-one. And this is a conversation after someone's done an initial bit of work for you, and then you have them continually at a you know, pace that makes sense for the pace of their work. And this is when you ask the person, like, so, doing a whole ton of free work for a project that I love and I'm really invested in, how is that going for you? And then, like, shh, this is not the part where you tell, like, your amazing, inspiring life story. This is not the part where you like slag on former delegees that are no longer here. This is not like a rambly, like, you know, like, tell me all about like your personal whatever. Like, mm-mm. You schedule a time to have a conversation where you're like, this is doing work for us. How is that going for you? And then you listen. And that's important. Because they're gonna tell you things. This is amazing. Like, if you ask people, like, people like to give their opinion. It's like one of those human nature things, like right after the picking bugs off each other. It's like opinions. They have them. Everyone has them. They will share, especially if they just spend a bunch of hours doing something for you. So they will definitely share their opinion. Sometimes you have to ask them to share their opinion on their way out. Like, so occasionally I get like, oh, people leave our project and we don't know why. And like, they think I will know. And I'm like, no, you needed to ask the person who left. You might find out that it didn't have anything to do with you, but if you find out it did, well, if you want more contributors, then you're gonna have to fix something. Or maybe you're gonna have to fix something just for that person and say like, oh, okay, like for some reason I thought you really loved working on the website, but if you don't, then we'll find something else for you to do. Sometimes you can kind of mix a task that they're doing with something else. So that it's a little bit more interesting. One of the things that we used to do, like back in the day when I did political organizing, and it's kind of before the internet for the most part, we would send out these little postcards that would talk about, like, there's an action alert, like, you have to call your representative about this issue. And we would mail out these little postcards. And there's not a whole lot that's more boring than just sticking stamps on a postcard. It is pretty, I mean, you could call it Zen if you want to put a nice gloss on it, but it is pretty boring unless you wrote the copy on the postcard. So like, if you can find ways to like couple the interesting work with the boring work in a way that makes sense, like the person who's putting stamps on a postcard that they wrote the copy on, it's like, and there's my brilliant words, and there's my brilliant words, and oh, look, it's going out of state. There it is again, another town, like, awesome. And they're like psyched. I mean, you know, for a while, they will continue to do this fairly menial task because they understand, one, how it fits into the bigger thing, and then two, they are invested, and you let them do the fun part as well as the boring part that are kind of coupled together. So you'll have to figure out how to exactly apply that to your own code base, your own work, your own organizing for user groups and things. But if you can combine the boring stuff with the fun stuff, you're gonna keep people longer. The shadow knows. You can also, if folks, like they're not ready to take on like a bigger task, like sometimes in these one-on-ones, you'll have a conversation where someone's like, yeah, so I don't mind doing this, that, the other thing, but like what I really wanna be is, you know, like basically like the boss. And you're like, huh, or I want to, like, can I have this whole giant chunk of the work? And you're like, I don't know if you're quite ready for that. Like, you know, so maybe people, like, their enthusiasm has exceeded their ability a little bit, or you don't know yet. Like, they've only done, like, two bugs for you, and they're like, yeah, I think I could release manage the next release. And you're like, yeah. Well, you know what would be a great thing? Why don't you shadow the person who's doing the next release and have them like give you some parts of it to do. So you kind of couple them, and then it's like, oh, because they may have asked for that not knowing like, oh, that's this much work. But if they shadow someone, they'll know. And they also will become the kind of person who could take it on, you know, eventually. So having people shadow someone else that's doing a task that they would rather be doing than the somewhat boring tasks you had them start with is another way to kind of keep people like a little bit grunt work, a little bit interesting. And then the recursive delegating, we talked about this before. If they're saying like, you know, I've been doing this for a couple of weeks, it's very boring and I'm done. And it's like, well, you've been documenting it. Why don't we try and figure out how we can find someone who can shadow you and you can teach someone and maybe a couple of someones to do this task. So, you know, it can, the delegating can go up and down and sideways and all different directions again until you've like a legion of minions. So, and then finally, sometimes it is not you, it is them. And we are gonna talk about that next. This is live delegating. Remember I told you guys about the audience participation, right? How are we on time? Oh, we're doing all right, okay. So when I told folks that I'm gonna give a talk on delegation and they're like, I got maybe like 10%, like kind of wisecracker, like, oh, you know what you should do is you should delegate the talk. And I was like, yeah, you're right. I totally should. So here we go, you guys. All right. Okay, Give me an IRC, Nick. I'm delegating. Come on, you guys. No one in here can think of an IRC, Nick. What?
Boss man.
Boss man, okay. All right. And a superlative. You guys know what that is? It's like an adjective that ends in EST.
Fanciest.
Wait, what was it? Fanciest? Fanciest, okay. All right. I know I have a little bit of liberal arts, so like I don't always know when people, you know, all the kind of highfalutin stuff there. So give me a web service, a type of web service. Anything.
Twitter.
Twitter, okay. And a profession.
Plumber.
All right. And then a number. 42. That was like unanimous. You guys are sure you're not like part bird there. Okay, and then a plural body part. Toes. All right. And a bad project behavior.
Slacking.
we'll do slacking. And then a negative emotion.
Shame.
All right. Okay. So this is sometimes when I remember how I said it's not you, it's them. Hi, boss man. I hope you can help me with something. As you know, we're trying to build the fanciest Twitter for plumbers that the world has ever seen. And we are planning to localize it for 42 new countries this month. Everyone is working their toes to the bone around here. So when you engage in slacking, it makes the other contributors feel shame. And that hurts the whole project. What do you think we should do about that? So I wanted to make this really obvious because I think when it isn't going well, most of us tend to be a little bit like conflict averse. And they're like, oh, you know, like, so I'm gonna give you guys another band story. I've seen this and it's like, it's amazing. Over and over again. Five dudes in a band, maybe mixed dudes, ladies, whatever. And four of them decide like the fifth person, like, oh man, hate that guy. But they don't want to tell him. So they're like, you know what? I don't really have time for a band anymore. Yeah, me neither. Like, I, you know. Let's say, like, we'll put it on hold. Like, maybe we'll, like, do a comeback tour or something in a couple years. But, like, basically, I think that it's time for the band to break up. And then four of them get together, like, a couple of weeks later, and they start another band with a new name. They're not fooling anyone. That fifth person is now just like, not only are you guys like jerks, like you're cowardly. So don't do that with you. If you have someone who's contributing on your project and you're like, oh, maybe we can put them on like a special part of the project in an IRC channel by themselves. Like, no, that isn't gonna work. And they're gonna know, like they'll know that you guys are all still in the other channel. Like, so I think when something is going poorly, and you might have to like, you might have to put a couple of cups of coffee in there and, you know, maybe like practice it with someone, but like go and tell them. That is like literally the best. Sometimes they don't understand that what they've been doing is harmful. And you know, and you've gone and you've been direct. Like, so sometimes they don't understand that what they're doing is harmful. Sometimes they kind of like, they sort of like fell into your group. Like I had a friend who was saying like, oh, I'm doing this group. We're supporting women learning Python. And they had a fellow who was coming and was like, I just kind of want to mansplain all over the place. And I mean, he didn't say it like that, but that was what he was doing. It was like, hey, like, I'm glad you guys all showed up to hear me talk again this week. And I was like, what? No. So she had to take him aside and be like, yeah, so the point of this group is sort of like peer-to-peer support for women and not really like a platform for you to share stuff that you know. And when you do that, it's sort of crushing the whole point of the group. And he was like, oh, I didn't realize that's what you're trying to do. Like, totally not interested in that peer-to-peer sharing thing. Like, I'm out of here. Like, and it was like, oh, great. I'm so glad we told you directly that, like, the behavior you're engaging in is counter to what we're trying to achieve. Because if no one had said it, he would have just kept showing up. It would have been like, oh, we'll try and, like, modify his behavior. Like, maybe we'll all body language, like, not face him when he talks. Or it's like, no. None of that secret stuff is anywhere near as effective as, like, hey, this is the impact you're having on the group. I wanted you to know, and I want to hear what you think we should do about it. They either will say, like, I'm not going to stop doing that behavior, or I didn't know I was doing that behavior, and then you know what to do. If they say, like, yeah, no, I'm sorry, I really, really, like, I feel like it's my First Amendment right to come to the project you guys have been working on for 4 years and be a jerk in your IRC, and it's like, yeah, I don't think this is the right place for you at this time. I'm sorry, like, we, you know, like, good luck, see ya, you know, and like, so don't let one, after you've done all this work to create a lovely, welcoming environment for delegates, don't let one person mess it up. So I hope that is helpful for you guys. Let's see. So, oh, whoops, let's see. We'll go back to the, all right. And so I don't really have too much more. I am gonna take questions. These are all the picture credits. And you know, basically, I think you guys are all ready to go. Identify folks to help you on your projects, help you start your user groups. And if you have questions, I am here for you. Thanks. In green. Right.
Help them run with it. How do bosses sort that out?
So the question is basically, like, what do you do when you have multiple bosses and you've kind of done some work under someone's direction, and then the other person, another one of the bosses or a team of bosses, is like, like, kind of doesn't do it right or doesn't understand what you've done or maybe changes the assignment later on. Yeah, so that kind of means that you have a problem with the boss one layer up who has not communicated well to the person above them, like, what is going on and what the expectation is. I feel like once that's already happened, the best thing you can do is ask for more transparency going forward and saying, like, hey, so here's my work plan, you know, minor boss. Like, can you share that up and ask for comments? Because I'd be happy to incorporate comments from further up so that you have an understanding, like, all the way down. So, like, it's more communication up and down the chain. It's a little bit clunkier. It's not as much fun as just working on your own thing alone. But then, you know, like I said, that's what the whole thing of having, like, a structure like that is going to entail. So the more you can ask for transparency, the better off I think that process is going to get as it evolves. Other questions? All right. Everyone's ready to be a boss? Yeah? Okay. Cool. Go forth and boss.